fished out the keys his predecessor had given him the night before over a transitional beer. Reed unlocked the door and, taking one good breath, walked into what was now his house at 7:20 sharp. Cece, who claimed to be a solitary witch as well as a little bit psychic, had insisted on doing some sort of ritual. Cleansing or opening or whatever. He hadn't seen the harm in letting her light a couple of candles, wave around a sage stick, and chant. He looked around now at what the city cop in him thought of as a bullpen. The desks where his deputies worked, four in facing pairs with the other two shared by the summer deputies. The dispatch station ran along the right wall. Visitor chairs were lined up on the left. A map of the island on the wall, a really sad-looking plant of some sort in a pot in the corner. The steel door led back to three cells, another to the small armory, one bathroom, unisex, a tiny break room with a hot plate for coffee, a small refrigerator, and a microwave. A table with a chipped linoleum top that he hoped to replace if he could find the means in his budget. He had a budget. Wasn't that a kick in the ass? He moved through the bullpen to the narrow hall that led one way to the break room, the other to the John, and straight ahead to his office. He went into his office, set down the coffee and donuts, took off his jacket, hung it on the tree by the door. His desk faced the office door, and he'd keep it that way. He had a decent chair, a computer, a whiteboard for scheduling, a corkboard, filing cabinets, a single window that brought in some sun. He had his own hot plate, and eventually he'd replace that with an actual coffee maker.
"Okay, then," he said aloud.
He went behind the desk, sat, booted up the computer, entered his password. He'd created the document the night before during Cece's magic ritual, and now opened it, gave it another look, sent it. When he heard the station door open, he rose, got the coffee and donuts, and went out to the bullpen. It didn't surprise him Maddie Stevenson was the first to arrive.
"Chief," she said, a little cool, a little clipped.
"Thanks for coming in early. Coffee, black."
He pulled her cup out of the tray. She frowned at it.
"Thanks. Donuts."
He flipped the lid on the box.
"You're first, so first choice."
When she continued to frown, he set the box on the closest desk.
"When I call everybody in a half hour early, the least I can do is bring coffee and donuts."
While she mulled them over, Leon and Nick came in.
"Chief Quartermain,"
Leon said, friendly but formal.
"Coffee,"
Reed said, passing out the cups.
"Donuts."
He waved a thumb at the box. Cecil strolled in.
"Hey, am I late?"
"Right on time,"
Reed told him, passing him his coffee.
"Wow, thanks, Chief. Hey, just how I like it.
Grab a donut, take a seat."
"That damn dog," Donna rushed in. "I don't know why I let Len talk me into that damn dog. What's all this?"
she demanded as she took off a puffy jacket, pulled off a boa constrictor of a scarf.
"Is this a party or a police station?"
"It's a meeting."
Reed handed her the last coffee.
"Have a donut."
"Donuts. We'll end up with a bunch of fat cops."
But she took one.
"I appreciate you all coming in early. I had a beer with Chief Wicket last night, and he wanted me to tell you all again thanks for the work you've done under him. I won't be changing much around here."
"Much?"
Donna sniffed as she bit into a jelly filled.
"That's right. I'm going to play with the budget some, see if I can find a way to get us a new table in the break room. I will be keeping Chief Wicket's open door policy. If my door's closed, there's a reason for it. Otherwise, it's open. If Donna hasn't already given everybody my cell number, get it. And I need yours. I need you to keep your cell charged and with you at all times, on or off duty. I know Chief Wicket used the whiteboard for scheduling. I'm using the computer. I've worked out next month's shift schedule. It'll be on your computers. If anybody needs to switch up, needs time off, you can work that out among yourselves. I just need to know. If we can't work it out, we'll find a way."
"Is your schedule on there?" Maddie wanted to know.
"It is. While we're out here, somebody tell me, what the hell is that thing?"
They all looked at the sickly plant.
It's an eyesore, Donna said. The chief's wife gave it to him for some damn reason. We ought to put it out of its misery.
Oh, now, Donna, Cecil began.
The chief had a black thumb. No offense, Cecil.
Cecil, the only black person in the room, just grinned.
I got two of those. But we can't just toss it out. That ain't right.
Anybody here got a green thumb? Reed asked.
I don't know what color mine is. I've never tried growing anything.
As one, the group turned to Leon.
Okay, Leon, you're in charge of the thing over there. If it dies, we'll give it a decent burial. And before the growing season hits, maybe you can tell me something about the lupins and whatever else I'm going to have coming up at my place. I don't know a damn thing. I can help you out there. Great. One more personal thing. I think I'm going to need somebody to give my place a going over, like, once or twice a month. I'm not looking at you.
He had to laugh as the faces ranged from stony to appalled.
I'm asking for suggestions.
Kaylee Michael and Hester Darby handle turnover for Island Rentals, Donna told him. They bring in extra hands for that during the season, but Kaylee and Hester are Islanders.
I met Hester.
Seeing as you're one messy man in that big place, you'd be smarter to hire both of them. In and out quicker, and they're a good team.
Thanks, I'll talk to them. If anyone's got any questions, comments, snide remarks, now's the time. If there are more personal questions, comments, snide remarks, you can see me in my office.
Do we get written up for snide remarks?
He gave Maddie a level stare.
I guess we'll have to find out. I'm not much of a hard ass, but I'm not a pushover. You'll have to figure out the sweet spot. Check your schedules. I'll be in my office.
He grabbed a donut on the way out. It took less than 10 minutes for the first to tap on his door jamb.
Come on in, Nick.
You've got me scheduled for next Saturday night. It's my 6-month anniversary, and I promised to take Tara, my wife, over to Portland for a fancy night out. Cecil said he'd switch with me.
I'll fix it. How'd you meet Tara?
She took a summer job with a friend of hers on the island a couple years ago. A lifeguard? She pulled this guy out. He had a heart attack, it turns out, damn near drowned. She pulled him out, gave him CPR, brought him back. I was on beach patrol, so I talked to her, got her statement and all, and that was that.
He smiled, stars in his eyes.
Anyway, thanks, Chief.
Minutes later, Maddie came in, sat, folded her arms.
Is this going to be a snide remark?
That depends. It's starting as comment and question. The snide remark depends on your answer.
He sat back.
Fire away.
Chief Wickett was a good cop, a good boss, and a good chief. But he had one blind spot. We've got one bathroom.
We do, and I don't see how I can stretch the budget to add a second.
I don't care about that. I care that the chief's blind spot meant he expected me and Donna to rotate cleaning the bathroom. Because we've got the ovaries, to his way of thinking.
I don't share that way of thinking. Unless I can, once again, stretch the budget to have somebody come in once a week.
Men are smelly and sloppy. Once a week doesn't cut it.
Okay, then twice a week, if I can stretch it for somebody to come in and deal. Otherwise, daily full rotation, including those without ovaries. I'll send out a staff memo on it.
Are you on that rotation?
He smiled at her.
I'm the chief of police. That means I don't scrub the toilet. But I'll do my best not to be smelly and sloppy.
Toilet paper goes on the holder, not on the damn side of the damn sink.
I'll add that in.
Toilet seat goes down.
Jesus.
He scratched the back of his neck.
How about this? The lid and all goes down after each use. Seat alone, I'm playing favorites.
That's fair.
But she hesitated.
More?
It ought to be just the deputies on John cleaning duty.
Why not Donna? She doesn't use the toilet?
You have to get down to scrub the floor. She's fit and she's agile, but I know it hurts her knees.
Okay, just deputies. Thanks for telling me.
She nodded, rose.
How come you have me patrolling with either Nick or Cecil instead of Leon?
Because they both need more seasoning and you and Leon don't.
The way it was before...
This isn't before. Take your toilet victory, deputy.
He heard the phone ring in the bullpen.
If that's a call, you and Nick are up first. Let's keep it safe out there.
By the end of his first day, he made more adjustments, gave some, held the line more. He took a couple calls himself just to keep his hand in. At the end of his first week, he locked up the station feeling satisfied and steady. He left his cruiser at the station, opted to walk. If he got an after-hours call, he'd take his personal vehicle. He picked a couple things up at the market, made his way home in air that tasted of storms. His weather forecaster at the sunrise said that nor'easter was barreling in. Since the official weather station agreed, he intended to batten down his own hatches, to be ready if he got a call involving storm damage, accidents, or downed trees. His trees swayed in that whooshing wind, but they'd come through storms before. He angled to go in the back in the kitchen. He spotted Simone's car parked beside his and thought, oh yeah, finally. He didn't see her, so he walked around to the water side of the house. And there she was, standing in the wind, hair blowing. Hair now the color of his grandmother's treasured mahogany sideboard. Thump, thump, thump went his heart. He wondered if it always would.
Hey there, he called out. Nice breeze, huh?
She turned, eyes alive, face glowing.
Nothing like a storm gathering itself up.
She walked over to him. How'd week one go for you?
Not bad. You want to come in?
Yeah. She walked around with him, watched him slide the glass door open to the kitchen. You don't lock up?
If anybody wanted in, they'd just break the glass.
He set the market bag on the counter.
You want a drink?
What are you offering?
I've got Cece's wine.
He got a bottle of each, held them up. I'll take the cab. She wandered through. Nice couch. You need some throw pillows.
Women need throw pillows. I'm a guy.
A guy who probably wants women on this couch.
You have a point. Throw pillows it is. I don't know anything about buying throw pillows.
He opened the cab. You'll figure it out. She walked to the painting. Now this is just wonderful.
Best gift ever.
He got a beer for himself, brought her the wine.
Do you want a tour?
Yes, in a minute. You've made a good start down here. You need more art, a couple of chairs, another table or two, including one for over there so you have an actual table when you have someone to dinner.
I can't cook. Well, scrambled eggs. A GCB.
GCB?
Grilled cheese and bacon. House specialty along with frozen pizza. Are you hungry?
More curious. Perching on the arm of the sofa, she sipped wine. The last time I saw you, and that's been more than 2 weeks, you kissed me and told me I was the most beautiful woman you'd ever seen.
I did. You are.
You never followed up. He gestured with the beer, drank.
You're here, aren't you?
Her eyebrows lifted, one disappearing under a sweep of mahogany. That might make you smart, strategic, or lucky. I wonder which.
I'll take some of all three. I figured pushing equaled mistake.
You'd be right. And you figured waiting would bring me around?
I hoped it would. I should also tell you I only had another couple days of waiting in me before I headed your way. I was working on how to be subtle about it.
Okay, then. She rose. I have something for you in the car. I wasn't sure I'd give it to you. For one thing, I wasn't sure it would suit. I think it will. She handed him her glass. Why don't you top this off for me while I get it?
Sure.
He topped off the wine, wondering what to make of her. She wasn't really flirting, more conversing. He thought he might drown himself in his strange green tub if she'd decided they'd just be friends. She came back, traded him a box for the glass. He broke the seal with his pocket knife, pawed through the packing, lifted out the sculpture of a woman no bigger than his hand. Exquisite, she perched on some sort of budded stalk like a flower herself, with her hair flowing over her shoulders and down her back between a pair of wings. She held a hand to her hair as if brushing it back from a face with the lips curved and long-lidded eyes full of fun. Your house fairy, Simone told him. For good luck.
Jesus. First an original Lennon, now an original Simone Knox.
Some men might think a fairy too girly.
I think she's beautiful.
He set her on the mantel at the corner of the painting, closest to where he sat with Cece.
Does she work there?
Yes, she does. You need candlesticks on the other end. Something interesting and not... He moved in, kissed her with a little more punch than the first time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This time she stepped back. How about that tour?
Good timing on that. I hired a bi-monthly cleaning crew. They came in today.
Kaylee and Hester, I heard. He took her around the main level. She, like Essie, like Cece, made comments, suggestions. She paused in front of a closed door.
Office, he said,
placing a hand over the knob to keep it closed. He sure as hell didn't want her to see his boards.
I take care of that myself, so it's pretty messy right now. I've got a guest room over here.
It's really pretty. Welcoming.
My partner had definite ideas, so I tried to follow them. Mostly. I'm hoping she and her husband will use it this summer. They've got a kid, but I've got a second guest room, or will eventually. And my parents, my sister and her family, my brother and his.
It's nice. An ensuite. Was it the master?
No, that's down the other end.
On the way, she stopped at what he thought of as retro green. This is just charming. Anybody else would have gutted this, but you went with it, and it's adorable.
And now I have to confess gutting was my first thought. Essie, my partner, had different ideas. And she sent me the seahorse shower curtain and the towels, even the mirror over the sink with the seashell frame. The only thing I did buy was the vanity. Oh, and I had John Pryor replace the faucets. They were pretty awful.
But you stuck with the old style. Mid-century. You need a mermaid, she decided. Find yourself a good print of a sexy mermaid. Frame it in shabby chic white like the vanity and hang it on that wall.
A mermaid.
A sexy one. She walked out, followed him down to the master. Well now. She stepped in, circled. Is this your partner, too?
Some. She insisted I get a bed.
If you didn't have one, what did you sleep on?
It was a bed. The kind of bed that's a mattress on top of box springs on top of the floor. I lived in a crap hole apartment in Portland. Moved in right out of college, and I stuck with it because I wanted to buy a place. You have to save up for the place, then find the place. It wasn't the sort of apartment where you thought about furniture.
You thought about this? The colors are good. Strong but relaxing. I like that you didn't go with a new dresser. Did you paint it the navy blue?
I found it at the flea market. Picked up a few things there. The drawers needed some work, but it was already painted. I saw it and thought, deal.
No curtains at the doors to the porch. I'd never put curtains on that view. If you want to sleep late, pull the sheet over your head. She turned back to him. Do you step out there in the morning, look around, and think, all mine? He looked around now, nodded.
Pretty much every day.
She opened the door, let the wind roll. God, doesn't it just rush right through you? All that power and beauty? The energy? Her hair flew back in wild streams. Her skin seemed to glow against the angry, roiling sky. In the distance, he saw the first flash of lightning.
Yes.
She eased the door closed, turned back with that crazy, sexy hair, the glow. She walked to the nightstand, set down her glass. A coaster?
If I set a glass or bottle down without one, I hear my mother's voice saying, and she's got that exasperated mom tone down cold. Read Douglas Quartermain, I taught you better. So... coasters. Because sometimes you want to stretch out with a beer.
Sometimes you want. She moved to him, and with her eyes on his, began to unbutton his shirt. He saw himself grabbing her up like a madman, taking what he so desperately wanted for his. To his surprise as much as hers, he closed his free hand over her busy ones.
I'm going to slow this down a little, he said.
Her eyebrows shot up again.
Oh?
He had to take a breath, step back. Since he only had the one coaster handy, he set his beer on the dish he used for loose change every night.
Did I read this wrong?
She asked him.
No. A plus in reading comprehension.
I wanted you from the first second I saw you walking down the stairs at Cece's party.
No, I lie, he corrected. I wanted you when I saw you in that painting, the one Cece calls Temptation.
Hence the name, she said, watching him.
Yeah, good title. But the night of the party, I saw you. I saw you walking down the stairs and everything turned. Everything stopped, then started again. It was a goddamn moment, Simone.
You've had moments before. When she started to turn and reach for her wine again, he put a hand on her arm.
Not like this. Let's get that clear straight off. This is another goddamn moment. I just want to slow it down.
You don't want to have sex with me tonight?
I said I wanted to slow it down a little. I didn't say I'd lost my mind. I want you tonight. I'm going to have you tonight unless you walk out the door. I just want to slow it down.
He drew her in, took her mouth. Long and slow, in contrast to the storm breaking outside the glass. Soft and smooth and dreamy.
Don't walk out the door, he whispered.
In answer, she wrapped her arms around his neck, took the kiss deeper. How slow? She asked.
Pretty slow. To start, anyway.
He slipped the jacket off her shoulders.
I've had some pretty intense dreams about you in that bed. We may get there.
He went back to her mouth as the wind kicked. Lightning flashed. Thunder rumbled in its wake. She'd underestimated him. She knew that now. She'd been so sure they'd just jump in, and she'd rid herself of this damn itch he'd left her with. But he lured her into wanting more. Into giving more. Feeling more. When he plucked her off her feet, she felt her heart skip, heard her breath catch. Then he took her mouth again. God, he was good at it. As he laid her on the bed, she drew him down with her, absorbing his weight, the shape of him, before she rolled to reverse positions.
I can do slow.
She dipped her lips to his, a soft brush, a tease.
But I want to.
Watching him again, she finished unbuttoning his shirt, toed and kicked off her boots. Stretched over him, she nipped at his jaw.
I like your face. Lean, angular.
The eyes deep set in that quiet green that's really not quiet at all. I've done sketches of your face.
You have?
Trying to decide what to do with you.
She tossed her hair back, smiled down at him.
I decided this part of it.
She ran her hands down his sides, then stopped with a jerk.
You're wearing a gun.
Sorry. Sorry.
He rolled her back, sat up.
I didn't think of it.
He unclipped it, shoved it in the drawer of the nightstand.
You forgot you're wearing it because it's part of who you are.
Of what I do.
And who you are.
He shifted around, saw her kneeling on the bed behind him.
It's all right,
she told him.
Just gave me a jolt for a minute. But who knows the good guys from the bad guys better than you and me? I really wish you'd undress me now.
I can do that.
But you should take off your boots first so I can do the same with you.
Good idea.
He bent over to drag at the laces.
How long since you've done this?
Since...
Before he'd been shot, he nearly said.
Since last fall, for one reason or another.
A long time. It's been a long time for me, too. For one reason or another. Maybe we could speed it up. Just a little.
Also a good idea.
He turned back, knelt with her to pull the sweater over her head. She wore a black bra, cut low.
Man, sorry, but I'm going to have to take another moment.
When he put his hands on her, she let her head fall back.
You can take a moment, or two. You have good hands, Reed. Strong, confident.
I've wanted them on you, just like this.
You never pushed.
Worth waiting.
She lifted her head, opened her eyes.
Wait's over.
She yanked at his shirt, pressed against him, gave herself over to the next kiss. Hungrier now, harder. She dragged at his belt as the need swamped her. Around them, the room exploded with lightning, and thunder answered in a roar. Rain lashed, driven by the howling wind. He pushed her back, dragging at her jeans as she dragged at his.
We'll slow down after, she managed.
Best idea yet. Let me.
His mouth rushed over her.
So much to taste, so much to feel.
When his hands found her, hot, wet, ready, she arched against him with a ragged moan.
Don't wait. Don't wait.
Can't.
He stripped her down, plunged in. The world shattered, and at long last, he let himself take. He gripped her hands as if to hold them both tethered to the bed. Her legs locked around him as her hips flashed, as she demanded more, more. She tightened around him, an urgent fist, but he held on, barely held on, so there could be more even when she cried out. She gathered again, groaning with the build, rising and falling with him. This time when she broke, she said his name, and buried in her, he let go. Chapter 19. The two of them stayed tangled, sweaty, breathless, while the wind slapped the rain into ice, and the ice hit the windows with the sound of hot grease sizzling. If he'd had his way, Reed would have stayed just as he was, smug and satisfied with the girl of his dreams until spring. Seriously smug, he thought, as Simone's hands trailed up and down his back. Then her fingers traced the scar from the exit wound in his shoulder. He shifted, braced on his elbows to look down at her.
You have the most amazing eyes.
They're brown.
Some artist you are, if brown is the best you've got. They're like a tiger's eyes. Like dark amber. We okay here?
Some police chief you are, if with all the evidence, okay is the best you've got.
I was being modest. You really need to stay. It's bad out there,
he continued before she could agree or refuse.
Really bad. I'll admit if this was a balmy night in June, I'd want you to stay for, oh, forever. Unless Cece gives in, then I'd have to kick you out.
You're talking about making it with my grandmother when I'm naked in your bed.
Fact is fact. But seriously, you need to stay. I've got wine, frozen pizza, and more sex in store.
She sent him a wicked look with a hint of a smile.
What kind of frozen pizza?
Sausage and pepperoni.
Rolling over, he grabbed her wine glass for her.
And I've got Dove bars.
Dove bars seal the deal.
She sat up, took the wine.
But I will insist on more sex.
Before or after pizza?
After. I worked up an appetite.
I need to text Cece. She knew where I was going, and she'll figure things out, but it is bad out there, so I want her to know I'm safe inside. Rising, he walked to the doors.
It really is bad. Tell her to text you back. Let's make sure she's okay.
Cece's weathered more storms than both of us put together. And she's got a generator, which is why she's having her usual nor'easter gathering. A few friends, a lot of food and alcohol. Everyone will bunk there until this blows out. You were invited, she told him,
but I had other ideas.
He switched on the fire, adding the flickering light of flame.
You have good ideas.
I'm glad you think so. Because another of my ideas, I'm going to have to sculpt you. Guardian. Protector, she mused. Not with a gun. I don't like them. I think a sword. Maybe in mid-swing. Maybe...
He glanced back.
Like I'm wearing armor?
She laughed, hitched herself back to prop up on the pillows as she drank.
No, Reed. You'll be wearing the sword.
I don't really think...
You've got a good form, an appealing body. Rangy, but not gaunt. You were on the edge of gaunt at Cece's party, but you're back in shape.
Still a couple pounds light.
And though he'd never been the modest type, he found himself reaching for his discarded boxers.
I can't seem to get it back.
You look good. I know the human anatomy, the male body. You look fit and strong, along with the rangy. She got up now, walked to him, traced her fingers over the scar on his shoulder, his side. And these.
You'd want to leave them out.
No. They're part of you. Part of the protector. You were wounded, but you still pick up the sword. That's admirable.
It's a job.
It's you. The boy who stopped to grab a terrified child in the middle of a nightmare, who protected him. I admire that. I might be here if I didn't. It was a long fast for me. But I wouldn't stay. She rose on her toes, brushed his lips with hers. I need to sculpt you. I could do it from memory now, but I'd rather do some sketches of you.
You're trying to sex me into it.
Oh. With a slow, slow smile, she trailed a hand down his chest, his belly. I will.
I'm going to have to make you prove that.
He started to pull her in, wanted to ravage that smile.
And his phone rang. Crap. Crap, crap, shit, sorry.
He crouched down for his jeans, dug the phone out of his pocket.
Quartermain. Okay, slow it down. Where? All right, I'm on my way. Stay calm. I've got to go,
he told Simone as he dragged on his jeans.
I'm taking the calls tonight.
What is it?
Car accident, downed tree, a lot of hysteria.
I could go with you.
Absolutely no.
He pulled on his shirt.
Stay. Toss the pizza in the oven.
Eat.
I'll text you.
He took his gun out of the drawer, clipped it on. You need a slicker.
I've got rain gear downstairs.
Sitting, he laced on his boots.
Flashlight in the drawer there and candles. A lantern downstairs if the power goes out.
Be careful, Chief. It really is bad out there.
If I only had my sword.
He stood, grabbed her, kissed her.
Pizza and ice cream in the freezer. I'll be back as soon as I can.
So, she thought as she stood in the empty room, this is what happens when you start sleeping with a cop. He hadn't hesitated, hadn't really bitched. He'd just thrown on his clothes and walked out into the storm. She went to his closet, found herself amused he used about a quarter, if that, of the available space. She checked the bathroom. Apparently the scarred, rangy cop didn't own a robe. She went back to his closet, borrowed one of his shirts. She texted Cece, simply tapping in she'd ride out the storm at Reed's. 2 minutes later, Cece replied with, "Woohoo!" She considered pizza, but decided she'd wait a while first. Maybe he'd be quick. She thought about TV, decided against. Books. He had some stacked in the bedroom, and she'd seen some downstairs. Catch 22, some thrillers. Bradbury's Something Wicked This Way Comes. She enjoyed that particular book, but decided it wouldn't be the best choice on a dark and stormy night alone in a still unfamiliar house. If only she'd brought her sketch pad. On the chance he had a notebook or pad, she opened the nightstand drawers. The flashlight, as advertised, and an iPad that she discovered could operate the TV, a music system, the fireplace. So, the chief liked technology. Something new to add in the getting-to-know-him file. Home office, she remembered. Bound to have a pad and a pencil in a home office. She wandered out, stopped to smile at the retro bathroom. Maybe she'd paint him a sexy mermaid. She was no Cece Lennon with brush and paint, but she could manage a fun, sexy mermaid. She'd while away the time until he got back sketching mermaids, and a few of the protector. A study from the side, the right side because she wanted the scars, mostly back and butt, his head turned toward the right, sword lifted with both hands, caught in the downswing. She had to ask him not to get a haircut for a bit. She wanted it a little long and shaggy. Lightning flashed again as she opened the office door, and she thought of him out in it because someone needed help. She'd come for the sex, she admitted. Primarily for the sex. But she stayed, she waited, because of who she'd begun to discover he was. She switched on the lights, thought he hadn't lied about the mess. Piles of files on a boxy old desk, and a teddy bear with a gun and badge. Folding chairs against the wall, an open trash can loaded with bottles and cans. Maps pinned right to the unfinished walls. But hello, a stack of legal pads. They'd do in a pinch, in the closet that had no door. She walked in, took one, turned to the desk to hunt down pencils. And saw the boards. Saw what was crowded on the two big boards. God. Oh, God. She had to grip the back of his desk chair. Breathe in, breathe out. She knew the faces. So many of the faces. She'd formed some of them already with her hands. There. The boy she'd thought she loved. There. Her best friend. There. Reed's Angie. He had photos. Not just the faces, but of bodies, blood, broken glass, guns. One of those guns, she realized, had killed Tish, had shot me. She looked at the faces of the killers. Boys. Just boys. Hobart, Whitehall, Paulson. And on the second board, Patricia Hobart. Her photo and a sketch. She looked different in the sketch, but Simone saw her. And that face, she realized, had been the one Reed had seen when she'd tried to kill him. Other faces, other names, other bodies. Times and dates, cities and towns. He looked at this every day, she realized. He looked, studied, and tried to find the answers. My face, she murmured, touching the photos of the girl she'd been, the woman she'd become. My face on his board. His face and mine. He doesn't look away. He never has. So she sat at his desk and didn't look away. When Reed got home, soaked, at just before 2 a.m., he found Simone wearing one of his shirts, sitting by the fire, drinking a Coke and reading Bradbury.
Hey, you didn't have to wait up.
Couldn't sleep. She rose. You're soaked.
Yeah. I think it's starting to ease off some, but it'll probably blow another couple hours.
He dragged off a black slicker with police in reflective letters across the back and front.
Laundry room,
he said with a gesture, disappearing inside. When he came out, feet bare, she stood at his fridge, pulling out a carton of eggs. It's too late for pizza.
It's never too late for pizza,
he countered.
Didn't you eat?
Not yet. I can scramble eggs, too. What happened? How bad was it?
Do you know the Wagmans?
Priscilla goes by Prissy, and Rick. They live out by the school.
They had a fight. Apparently they've been having some marital troubles.
He had, and likely still is having, an affair with a woman who worked at Benson's Lobster Shack last summer, from Westbrook. Double divorcee.
So you know the background. Want a latte?
It's too late for lattes.
You're drinking a Coke.
Makes no sense, does it? I'll have a latte. Off topic for one moment, she said as she put a pat of butter in a skillet to melt, began breaking eggs in a bowl. You could use some herbs and spices that aren't salt and pepper and red pepper flakes.
Write them down and I'll get them.
What happened with Prissy and Rick?
Big fight, apparently, because, yeah, he's still seeing the woman from Westbrook. Prissy chose tonight, during the storm, to tell Rick, a drunk Rick, she was getting a lawyer and filing for divorce.
You can't blame her.
No, you can't,
he agreed.
She found a receipt from some lingerie shop in Westbrook in his pocket, which proves he's a cheater and a dumbass. This, when they've been having some money issues and he swore he'd ended things with the recipient of the sexy lingerie. Percy started dragging his clothes out of the closet, threatened to light them on fire, busted his MVP trophy from high school softball. He claims she threw it at him. She says she threw it against the wall. I'm going with her because I don't think she'd have missed and he was too drunk to duck. Anyway.
He set her latte on the breakfast bar while she scrambled the eggs.
He stormed out in the storm, drunk and pissed, lost control, hit a tree. Most of the tree fell on Kurt Siebold's truck. Siebold runs out, a little bit drunk himself, and he and Wagman get into it, bust each other up, with Siebold having the advantage of only being a little drunk and not already bloodied up from running into a damn tree. Siebold's wife, Alice, runs out, sees Wagman on the ground and her husband staggering around with blood pouring out of his nose and calls 911.
At least somebody acted sensibly.
Yeah, well, I had to arrest them both, haul their sorry asses to the emergency clinic. Siebold's back home. I figured house arrest until we sort through it all. Wagman's in the clinic with a cracked rib, and I know that's no fun. A mild concussion, busted lip, banged up knee, and so on. Prissy, who has no sympathy, suggested I tell him to call his slut, which I declined to do.
Wise. She toasted some of the bread he'd picked up at the market and set a plate down for him, then one for herself. This will keep the island entertained for weeks. I hope she doesn't take him back.
She seems pretty hardened there.
She took him back at least once before that I know of, another summer worker. They've only been married 3 or 4 years. He's never going to be faithful to her or the slut. He hit on me just last week.
Did he?
In an idiot sort of way. She sampled the latte. Good latte.
I've been practicing. The eggs are great.
They'd be better with some time.
Time's on the list.
He tapped his temple.
So how did you spend your evening?
She set down the latte, looked into his eyes. I have a confession to make.
At least you could let me interrogate you first. I can already see you've stolen one of my shirts. There will be consequences.
She laid a hand over his. I'm going to apologize first. I was rude and intrusive.
Did you find my stash of porn?
You have a stash of porn? He stared back, face deliberately blank.
Of what?
She let out a half laugh. God, you really are so damn appealing. I was restless after you left. I'm going to say something else because it hit me. With anyone else, I'd have gone home. I'd have said to myself, well, that was fun, left you a chirpy note, and gone home. Party at Cece's. But I didn't, and I'm really going to have to think about that. I never even considered leaving.
I asked you not to.
It wouldn't have mattered, she insisted. With anyone else, it wouldn't have mattered. I majored in one-night stands in college.
Long time ago, Simone.
Yes, but I have to think about why. When I was restless and alone in a house that's not mine, I didn't even consider leaving. But being restless, I thought I could sketch. Some of you and maybe a mermaid for your bathroom wall. Only I didn't have a sketch pad with me. So I went into your office to look for a pad.
Oh.
The shutters came down over those interesting green eyes.
Okay.
You closed the door.
I didn't lock it,
he pointed out.
I didn't say don't go in there if you know what's good for you.
God, you're so steady. So solid.
Not feeling as steady, she put her hands through her hair.
I saw the legal pads in the closet. No door there.
I'd just have to open and close it. What's the point?
Then I saw your work. Those big rolling boards. I realize some of what's on them is official. What? Crime scene photos and reports.
Yeah. Since you're not a suspect, we can let that slide. But I'm sorry you saw some of that.
It's what you see. The dead and destroyed, the bodies, the people who kill. You look right at it because somebody has to. Isn't that right? Don't say it's part of the job, Reed. She squeezed his hand. Don't say that.
It is part of the job. The job I choose to do. It's part of my life. It's a kind of mission, if that doesn't sound too lame.
Not in the least.
I won't stop until I take her down. If the feds beat me to it, that's fine. Either way, it closes out. When it does...
He reached over, brushed her hair back from her face.
I take down the boards. I file it all away.
Can you?
He sat back with his coffee.
What happened that night's part of us, and always will be. But it doesn't and it can't define us. Not you or me or who you and I are going to be together. We need, however hackneyed the word, closure. And some fucking justice.
Yes. She let out a breath. We, none of us, ever had either.
I'm going to work to get both. Then I'll think about Patricia Hobart sitting in a cell for the rest of her life, and I'll be good with it. Better then.
You're made that way. That's how it is for you. The good guys go after the bad guys.
That's how it should be. What are you doing, Simone? You're creating a memorial. You're working on the heart and the soul, honoring the dead, comforting those they left behind. That's a job, too, but it's not just a job. That's your mission.
I'm pretty late in getting to it.
So what?
You're awfully good for me, she stated. That scares the crap out of me.
I'm going to get even better for you, so you'll either get used to it or live scared.
He picked up their plates, took them to the sink. Will you talk to me about your work? Like, how you believe Patricia Hobart's going to try to kill one of the survivors who's moved south? The two in Florida are top of your list.
It's what I think, and mostly a hunch. The problem is hundreds of people survived. She's got a lot to choose from. I will talk to you about it, and you'll talk to me about your work. But not tonight. Did you check in with Cece?
I did. You got a woo and a who.
She'll probably never make hot, sweet love with me now.
He turned around.
I guess I have to settle for you.
She cocked her head. There's a gorgeous Italian cellist in Florence named Dante with whom I made hot, sweet love many times. And could again. But since I'm not in Florence, I guess I have to settle for you.
That's a solid snapback. I did promise you more sex.
You did.
I'm a man of my word.
He held out a hand. She took it. Reed managed a couple hours of sleep before a bright, blustery dawn. He told Simone to sleep and stay as long as she wanted before he headed out with a to-go cup of coffee and an I had a lot of sex spring to his step. He walked, despite the icy patches and slick mud, because he wanted to survey storm damage. He saw plenty of downed branches and hefty limbs, but no trees as unlucky as Kurt's. Needed some cleanup, he decided. He'd have to buy a chainsaw and be careful not to kill himself or others with it. The water might have been bright blue, but it rolled with some violence, white horses galloping. He spotted a crew of three surveying damage on some of the rentals, stopped to check. Shingles blown off here and there, plenty of storm debris, and, as one of the crew told him, a muddy, bitching hell of a mess since rain poured in again after the ice. He found a crumbled bike on the road, but no blood or sign of the passenger. He hauled it up to take it with him. Somebody's flag, pink with a flying white horse, lay tattered and soaked in a puddle. That he left behind. Some, already out clearing their yards, paused to call out to him, asked how he'd fared in his first nor'easter on the island. He didn't say he'd spent most of it in bed with a beautiful woman, but he thought it. He left the crumpled bike outside the sunrise when he went in to get a refill for his coffee and caught up with the news there. Branches and limbs, a collapsed dock, some low-lying flooding. But the big news centered on the Wagman-Seabold incident. Though pressed for details, Reed demurred. Gossiping about arrests in a cafe set a bad tone. He carted the bike to the station, found Donna and Leon already doing some gossiping of their own.
Where'd you find young Quentin Hobbs's bike?
Donna demanded.
About a mile out of the village? How do you know it's Quentin Hobbs's bike?
I've got eyes. And his mother, who's as ditzy as a drunk can-can dancer, just called in saying how somebody stole her boy's bike during the storm.
A drunk can-can dancer?
Have you ever seen one?
Not drunk or sober.
Take my word. And I said back to her, did your boy secure that bike in the shed? Did he chain it? Which he did not, as he takes after his mother and never does either. That bike took flight, that's what happened.
I'm with Donna, Leon said. Nobody's going to steal the kid's bike. And nobody's going out in the teeth of a storm to steal it for certain. It's trash now. You can tell her we recovered it.
She'll probably demand you dust it for fingerprints and launch an investigation.
She'll be disappointed. Leon, I'd appreciate if you'd go over to the clinic where I have Rick Wagman handcuffed to a bed. Check on his condition. If he's cleared, you can bring him back, lock him up. He's already been charged and read his rights. I heard some about that. Did he slap Prissy around? No, he did not, or he'd be charged with that, too. He's charged with OWI, reckless driving, assault on Kurt Siebold, destruction of private property, and resisting as he tried to take me on when I got there.
He swing at you?
Donna said, eyes narrowed. Half-assed. He was drunk, concussed, and stupid. I charged Kurt with assault as the two of them tried beating the hell out of each other. I let him stay home and don't see any cause to lock him up.
Frowning, Leon rubbed at his chin.
It seems to me Kurt was defending himself. He took the first swing, Leon, and said so himself. He'd had a few drinks, but he wasn't driving, and he won't be driving his truck ever again from the looks of it. I expect we'll end up dropping the charge against him, but it has to stand for now. How would he take it if I asked Cecil to go over there with a chainsaw and help him cut up the tree on his truck? I'd say he'd take that as good. Then that's what we'll do. Nick and Maddie are on second shift, but I'll pull them in if we need them. I want Wagman in a cell as soon as he's medically cleared, Leon. I filed the paperwork on him last night. He can get a lawyer, try for bail, but he's in a cell or cuffed to his bed at the clinic. Nobody's going to drive while intoxicated on the island under my watch and shrug it off. Yes, sir, Chief.
You look pretty perky and bright-eyed for somebody who was up half the night dealing with drunks.
Reed smiled at Donna.
Do I? It must just be my sunny disposition. I'm in my office. Send Cecil in when he gets here. And if he isn't here in 10, Donna, you call him and tell him to get moving.
He went in, sat down, booted up his computer. Then contacted the prosecutor who served the island when they needed one. Chapter 20. Rick Wagman got 60 days, a revoked driver's license, not his first drinking and driving rodeo, and mandatory rehab. Since adultery wasn't a crime, Reed decided it was a suitable punishment for being a drunk asshole. April arrived with a 2-day snow. Plows plowed, shovels shoveled while the dawn of spring took the island back to midwinter. Then the sun burst out, popping the temperature toward 50 degrees. The rapid snow melt gurgled its way into forming streams, chewing potholes into asphalt, swamping the beaches. Reed spent the lion's share of his first 3 weeks on the job dealing with weather-related incidents. Off hours, he made himself visible in the village, walking or biking around the island, often with Cece, Simone, or both. He spent as many nights as he could manage with Simone in his bed, and dedicated at least an hour every evening to Patricia Hobart. On his day off in mid-April, he ferried to Portland. He hadn't persuaded Simone to join him. Probably shouldn't have mentioned meeting his parents, he realized. He drove off the ferry, stopped to buy flowers, ended up choosing a madly blue hydrangea bush instead. Rethought, bought three. His parents weren't his only visit on this spring Sunday. He had brunch with his family, played with the kids, bullshitted with his brother, teased his sister, more or less helped his father plant the well-received hydrangea, and took away an enormous care package of leftovers. At his next stop, he found Letitia Johnson sitting on her front porch potting up pansies. She brushed off her garden gloves when he pulled up. He thought it amazing she looked exactly the same as she had the night he'd met her. He glanced across the street, thought the same couldn't be said. The landlord had indeed sold the lot. The new owners had razed what was left of the house, built a nice little place, currently a soft blue with white trim. They'd added a porch, a concrete walkway, a short blacktop driveway, some foundation plants. Next door,
Rob's and Chloe's fixer-upper had long since been fixed up into a pretty two-story in a sage green with the addition of a garage on the far side and a bonus room topping it. He knew they'd added another kid, too. He pulled the hydrangea out of the car, walked toward Letitia's welcoming smile.
Aren't you a fine sight on a sunny day?
Not as fine as you.
He bent down to kiss her cheek.
I hope you like hydrangeas.
I surely do.
Then pick your spot and tell me where I can find a shovel.
She wanted it right in front, where she could see it when she sat on her porch. While he dug, she went in the house, came back out with a plastic container.
Coffee grounds, some orange peels I haven't taken out to the compost yet. You bury these with the roots, boy. They'll help keep the blooms blue.
You'd like my father. I just delivered one there, and he said just the same. What do you know about lupins?
They talked about gardening, though most of it was like a foreign language to him. After, he sat on the porch with her, drinking iced tea, eating cookies.
You look healthy and happy. Island life agrees with you.
He hadn't forgotten she'd come to see him at the hospital. Twice.
It really does. I hope you'll come over sometime. Let me show you around. We can sit on my porch.
What you need is a pretty young woman sitting there with you.
I'm working on it.
Well, praise be.
How are the neighbors doing?
She looked across the street as he did.
Chloe and Rob and their two girls are doing fine. Sweet family. We've got new ones right across now in that poor woman's place.
Oh?
The family who built the house there, and it's a nice house, too. They just outgrew it. Young couple in there now, expecting their first next fall. Nice as nice can be. I took them over an apple pie to say welcome, and didn't they ask me right in, show me around? And the night before trash day every week, he and Rob, they take turns coming over here to take my bins down to the curb.
I'm glad to hear that.
You're still thinking about what was.
She's still out there.
With a shake of her head, Letitia rubbed the cross she wore around her neck.
A person who'd kill her own mama, kill her grandparents, that's not a person at all. It's something else that doesn't even have a name.
I have a lot of names for her. I know you didn't talk to her much, but you saw her, Ms. Letitia. Coming and going. I'm looking for patterns and breaks in them.
Like we've talked about. She'd drive up with groceries, stay a while. Mother's Day, Christmas, she'd bring something. Never looked happy about it.
Did she ever change her look? Like her hair, her style?
Not to speak of. But now I did see her once in one of those outfits the girls exercise in. Like for the gym or running around. Wasn't her usual morning and she looked downright annoyed. I have to say, she had a better figure than I'd have guessed.
She ran most mornings, we've verified that. Interesting.
Now that I think on it, I'm putting that at a time her mama took sick.
Could be Marcia Hobart called Patricia, nagged her into coming by before, and Patricia didn't bother to change from her morning run.
Now you're putting me in mind of something else.
Letitia tapped a finger on her knee.
She didn't look any different that day, or act it all that much, but maybe it's a break in the pattern, like you say.
She rocked, eyes closed, trying to bring it back.
Winter time. I can't say just when. But the young ones were building me a snowman right out here, and thinking of the ages, I'm guessing 5 or 6 years ago this was. My grandson, the police, you know, was shoveling off my steps, my walk, and he was wearing the scarf I made him and gave him for Christmas, so it was after that. I was out here supervising, brought the young ones a carrot for the snowman's nose, and she drove up.
She opened her eyes again, nodding as she looked at Reed.
I could tell she was annoyed right off when she got out because the walk over there hadn't been done. I called out to her. Asked if she wanted one of my kids to do some shoveling as the girl who did for her was down sick with the flu.
Letitia rocked a while, nodding again.
I'm remembering now. I walked over while I talked, seems to me, and she ducked her head as she usually did. I just took the bull by the balls, told my grandson to